Welcome to Your Future Starts Now, the go-to podcast for extraordinary women who are ready to step into their next chapter with authentic confidence. I'm your host, Gia Lacqua, empowerment coach, motivational speaker, children's book author, and girl mom. Whether you're a corporate powerhouse or an entrepreneur, this show is designed for you. Your Future Starts Now is more than just a podcast. It's a movement towards rewriting the rules of success for high-achieving women. Are you ready to get unstuck and step into your next chapter? If so, you're exactly where you need to be. Your future starts now. Welcome to Your Future Starts Now. I'm your host, Gia Lacqua. Thanks for tuning in today. I am so excited to introduce you to John Mallora. John is a personal performance coach and professional speaker who went from being a literal rocket scientist to a multi-award-winning heart-centered portrait photographer. His unique career path provided life experiences that most only dream of. John spent decades leading various teams, some that landed missions on Mars and others that protected the pilots of the most advanced fighter jet in the world, the F-35. Today, he provides world-class portraits and photographs that have been featured by National Geographic, multiple Fortune 500 companies, and some of the biggest names in music. However, John also knows firsthand what it feels like when the walls of achievement and elite-level accomplishments fail to fill a void inside. As John rediscovered his true self and his heart became more fulfilled, he longed for others to have the same feelings of self-acceptance and empowerment. John, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks. Yeah, glad we finally got to be here with all of our tech issues going on today.
Absolutely. So I'm going to ask I'll start with the elephant in the room. Tell us a little bit about your backstory. You went from being a rocket scientist working for NASA, and you turn to photography and to coaching. So tell us a little bit about your professional journey.
Yeah, it's certainly been a journey, and it was, as most of us are, still a work in progress. I'd always enjoyed photography. I think I got my first camera when I was 7. My mom got it for me for my birthday, and it just was always a great creative outlet for me. Mm-hmm. I just always saw the world differently, and that's kind of just how my photography started, and fell into the engineering job in the space program, not because I was incredibly intelligent, actually quite far from it. School was actually very difficult for me, but I got the job in the space program because, as with most things in life, when you look back on it, I hit a big valley in college, and in that I lost an internship that I was, you know, in competition for Walt Disney World with someone. And when I didn't get that, I didn't have a plan B for the summer. So what I decided to do was work at a Boy Scout camp. My fraternity brother said, "Hey, you want to work out in the woods?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure. That sounds great." And when I was doing that, I was supposed to be director of water sports, and that fell through at the last minute again. So, but I had been working with the maintenance crew, and being the unskilled labor, I got all the very unglamorous jobs, one of them being dewinterizing the cabins, which was code for pulling dead mice out of toilets.
Oh,
that had been laying in there all winter. Yeah. So, you know, first I got, you know, passed over by Mickey Mouse, and then now I'm pulling all these dead mice out. And I'm like, what have I like offended mice somehow in my past life? And so when the opportunity came up to teach rock climbing at that camp, I jumped on it. They said, "Do you want to do that?" I said, "Yep." They said, "You scared of heights?" I said, "Yep, sure am. But are you going to train me?" Anything but to, you know, pull dead mice out of toilets for the rest of the summer. So I took that opportunity that presented itself, even though it was way out of my comfort zone to teach rock climbing. They sent me away to training and got all trained up and ran a crew, and safely, I think, had like 700 or 800 scouts rappelling and climbing all summer. And so I put that on my resume when I graduated college a few years later. And I was interviewing for a project manager position at a NASA subcontractor, knowing nothing about what project managers did. You know, I was coming right out of college. And fortunately, someone saw the rock climbing on my resume. And they said, "Hang on a second, we got someone we need you to talk to." And this guy jumped on the phone. This is back in the 90s, so it was a phone interview, no Zoom, and didn't introduce himself. He just said, hey, what do you think about rock climbing on Mars? And me very flippantly just said, I don't know, are you going to pay my airfare? And I was like, oh, I blew it. And this mystery voice on the other end of the phone goes, get him down here, and then disappeared.
That's amazing.
Turns out the guy that jumped on the phone was the director of test operations for all of the Mars landing projects that the company worked on, starting with the Pathfinder missions in 1990s. Mm-hmm. And this is year 2000 at this point. So they're gearing up to land two missions on Mars in 2003, Spirit and Opportunity. That guy, his name was Skip Wilson. He was a former Vietnam era special forces guy. Ended up in engineering after his time in the military was up. And he and his team were responsible for making sure things actually worked before you put it on a rocket ship or put it on a pilot. So they would travel around the world to all these different test facilities and would make sure the things did what they were supposed to do, you know, what they said they could do on paper. So Skip saw someone that had a decent GPA, but also had practical experience that he could send out into the field from Antarctica to England and not get himself or his team injured or killed. So that was me, because I lost the internship and then spent the summer pulling dead mice out of toilets and said, no, that's not going to work for me. And then decided to learn how to be a rock climbing instructor. So that's how I ended up working in the space program.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it wasn't like I had planned on that and had worked mm-hmm. towards that at all. It was just the opportunities presented themselves through a series of failures, which, you know, is a recurring theme, I think, through all of our lives.
That is such an incredible story. I love it. And I love how you talk about, I know in the beginning you talked about like stepping into the fear that was outside of your comfort zone, you know, realizing, yeah, I am afraid of heights, but that, you know, I'm going to work through that. I'm going to push through it. Right. And still step into that next opportunity, which is obviously very difficult for many of us. And then, you know, the fact that you recognized, wow, this is an opportunity for me. And again, pushing through the quote unquote failures or the challenges, and they led you to something so much greater, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it's whenever I do one-on-one coaching with people, or even like if I'm leading a small group, one of the things that I have them do is create their lifeline, you know, draw a line across. Yes. And this is an old Donald Miller thing, draw a line. And that's a negative experience. Anything above the line is positive. Anything below is a negative experience, and have them do a timeline of their life with positive and negative experiences. And, you know, what usually happens is after a valley, a group of negative experiences or significant negative experiences, that's actually when a lot of times those very positive and game-changing experiences happen on the other side of that. Mm-hmm.
The growth. And it's hard to see when we're in the valley.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's hard to see and it's hard to push through, but it fuels that growth.
Right.
Yeah, it's so powerful. I love that exercise. So, John, you and I have a lot of overlap in the work that we do. I think we probably work with a different population, right? You work primarily with men, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I work primarily with women. Now, there's a lot of overlap in the themes. And there's the reality is research proves that there is a confidence gap when it comes to gender. But I want to point out that does not mean that men don't struggle with things like self-confidence, right? And that self-doubt. I know you have your own personal experiences and I know of many others. Now, I'm going to venture to guess that some of that research might be, how should I say this? Not intentionally biased, but I suspect that the people answering those survey questions, right, are bringing maybe their ego to answer those survey questions versus their higher self, right? Because the ego is there to serve and protect, and we want people to see us in a certain light. So I suspect that research isn't quite as accurate as it could be, right? If people were truly honest about that. Nonetheless, there is a real need, right? There is a very real, valid struggle. And I think even though we do similar work, it's through a different lens, right? Similar to your camera, what you were talking about with photography. You know, given the way we were raised as boys and girls in society, in, you know, our families of origin, there are different experiences. And, right. and there are some similarities for sure, but it's through the lens for me of high performing women, right? And for you, high performing men. So I want to just talk a little bit about that from your perspective. Talk to us more about the work that you do.
Yeah. So, so much of like our culture is, you know, from a young age, you know, especially like I grew up in the 80s and 90s, I was born in the late 70s. So I was still that generation, like, you know, boys don't cry, suck it up, buttercup.
Yeah.
And you don't talk about your feelings. You don't, you know, admit that you're struggling. Like you're talking about, that data is likely skewed. You know, I worked in test engineering. Like that's what we did. Like we made sure these things were going to work. So we, our job was to find that truth. And you're only as good as the validity of your data. Like it wasn't going to do the space program any good if I was checking how strong something was, if my scale was totally way off base. Mm-hmm. Right. So if that data is not valid,
yeah.
then that, you know, puts into question everything else. So I think with a lot of, especially high performers, whether it's female or male, there that and it's starting to change. You're starting to see the tide turn now, but the very established approach to being a leader or being quote elite was you nothing fazed you, nothing bothered you, you had all the answers all the time, and you always knew what to do. And if you didn't, you presented that face anyway, and you just charged ahead. You know, what they're seeing now is, you know, leaders that actually have empathy for their team, meaning that they can put themselves in the shoes, so to speak, of the people that they're leading and adjust communication styles or way messages are conveyed. Those are actually what are very effective leaders. You know, not like the drill instructor, you know, screaming and yelling at someone. That's not to say that military type of drill instructor, you communicate with everyone the same way, doesn't serve a purpose for the military. But that's a very different purpose than being leaders of teams, especially in business. You know, the military's whole thing is to condition people to take orders and do what they're told, right? Whereas, especially in business, we're trying to get the most out of our team, you know, performance-wise. I mean, business is there to make money. So you need to figure out ways to communicate with your team that are best suited to them. So that's why a lot of my coaching, when it starts off, is to have people understand how do they function best being communicated to. Are they someone who functions best with very direct communication? Because some people are like that. Like that's why I utilize the Enneagram in my coaching at the mm-hmm. beginning. You know, are they a type eight that you need to be like, hey, you screwed that up, here's what you need to do better. And they're like, okay, got it. Or are they someone that's like, hey, I saw you really tried hard on that. How do you think that went? You know, figuring yep. out the communication stuff. Yep. So that's, you know, to me, what being a leader, you know, regardless of gender is.
Yeah. I love what you're talking about in terms of the leadership skills, and definitely can relate to a lot of those concepts that we were raised with. You know, to your point, we were taught to be stoic, right? And now the key to being a good leader is being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. We were taught to be non-emotional, right? Don't show emotion. And now we know that being a good leader means having empathy.
Right.
Right. And it's how do we hold space for both and learn to grow into the other? You know, the other one that comes up for me is keep your head down, do your work, keep your head down. Right now, especially for women, is you have to advocate for yourself,
right?
Which is, most of us were not taught to do that. Right. So it is so interesting to step back and look at that transition and the evolution of leadership. I'm curious, any advice or thoughts for people who may be feeling that tension or that struggle of how to lean into or step into the vulnerability, the empathy, and advocating for yourself.
Yeah, I think, and this goes with a lot of things, especially in the self-improvement space, is to look at it as like almost like you would a fitness goal or something like that. Like, you don't go all in and start pumping iron like Dwayne The Rock Johnson, right? Like, that's not going to happen if you're just starting. So as far as like personal development work and leaning into empathy or being vulnerable, start slow and give yourself grace. That's one of the big things I talk about in my keynotes and workshop, is giving yourself grace and going again, because so many people feel like they need to get it right the first time. And if they don't, well, okay, guess I failed at that. No sense in going forward, which is actually a form of perfectionism. Yeah. It's that same mentality of, oh, well, I was supposed to work out 4 times this week. I missed Monday because my kids were sick, and then I had to travel the next day. I might as well just skip the rest of the week. Mm-hmm. So giving yourself grace and starting slow and coming up with a plan, and then giving yourself some flexibility in that while still mm-hmm. holding yourself accountable.
Yeah. So do you find that men also struggle with perfectionism?
I know this from my own life. The more uncomfortable I would feel, and I think this is true for anyone, the more uncomfortable someone feels, the easier it is to dive into the minutiae and make sure every little thing is quote unquote perfect, which, spoiler alert, nothing's ever perfect. Mm-hmm. So we just need to do the best we can and go again. So perfectionism, a lot of times for me, and I think for others, really crops up whenever they feel very unsure of themselves. Because if you're already feeling unsure of yourself, like, you shouldn't be there. Like you mentioned, my work with imposter syndrome, that I have a whole litany of stuff on that. If you're already feeling on shaky ground, then you shouldn't be there. The last thing you want to do is give anyone ammunition to say, oh, Gia's really not supposed to be doing this. Mm-hmm. So a way to seemingly combat that, and people spin it as a positive trait, is to dig into perfectionism, when mm-hmm. really, as the author John Acuff says, perfectionism is just fear dressed up in a tuxedo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great point. And so let's talk about imposter syndrome. So you had your own experience with, you had letters of commendation from the Department of Defense. You had accolades and awards, you know, that were being given to you and your team for the work that you were doing. And yet you still struggled with imposter syndrome. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, number one, I didn't even know what imposter syndrome was probably till about 10 years ago. Because again, I didn't have that vocabulary growing up. Like, I didn't go to counseling. We didn't, you know, my kids are in public school now, and they have counseling classes, like how to handle your feelings and how to talk to people. Like, that wasn't happening mm-hmm. at the Catholic high school I went to in 1994.
Yep.
I can tell you that much. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have that vocabulary of what imposter syndrome was, which is that feeling of, regardless of your accomplishments, degrees, whatever you've done, you feel like you're a fake and you're just BSing everybody. And it's only a matter of time until they find out you're not as awesome as everyone thinks you are. So yeah, so I had a very real experience with that. Like you said, when we got a letter of commendation for a Department of Defense project we had completed. And I just remember right before the president of our company called my name and was going to give me these commendation letters, I just, like, all of a sudden had this upwelling of fear. And it was, you know, thoughts like, you're not good enough. You're a fake. You're not smart enough to be here. People are actually laughing at you. They're going to pull this paper from you. They're going to realize you don't deserve it. Like, all these things just started coming through my head, like, to the point where I was almost in tears. And people probably thought, like, I was in tears because I was so proud of it, when really it was, you know, I was having a panic attack. So that was a continual theme, because I never felt good enough. So if there was a potentially hazardous operation or project to work on, like, I was the first one to raise my hand, because I think subconsciously, before I got a handle on my self-confidence, very much later in life, I was always thinking, okay, maybe if I do this job, maybe I'll feel worthy. if I complete this, then maybe I'll feel good about myself. Well, that didn't happen. We'd complete the mission or the project, and I'd already be on to the next thing. You know, like I'd skip the pizza party or whatever we had, or be like, this is stupid. Why are we even celebrating this? I got work to do. Let's chop, chop. Let's go, people. And that was just because I just had such an innate sense of unworthiness and a lack of confidence that no matter what thing I completed or objective I reached, like it just wasn't good enough until I actually was able to do, you know, as Anthony Trucks calls it, the dark work on myself to figure out that I am worthy of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So powerful. Very relatable. I want to just go back to the inner critic piece for a second. And where do you think that came from, right? That inner voice that tells you you're not good enough, right? You're not worthy. People are going to figure you out. Where does that come from?
Yeah, with all kinds of mental conditions, it's obviously very complex. And one of the things they talk about with imposter syndrome is, you know, a lot of it can certainly have to do with upbringing. You know, if you're bounced between being like, you know, the best child in the world, and then you make one little mistake, and then all of a sudden now you're the worst kid in the world, that kind of ping ponging. It can also show up later in life with new responsibilities. I mean, it's just natural to question your abilities.
Yeah.
You know, people that don't, like, they also need to be checked, you know, reel themselves back in. But a lot of it has to deal with having the skills to handle those big emotions when they come up, and being able to recognize them and then also, you know, adjust appropriately. And a big part of it is sharing how you're feeling with people, having trusted advisors in your life.
Sure.
And if you don't have trusted advisors in your life, if you're listening to this right now and you're saying, I don't have anyone that I can trust or I can talk to, the biggest advice I can give is then you need to step up and start being that trusted advisor for other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you will eventually find people that can be your trusted advisor.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Great advice. And I think, you know, to your point around, there's part of it is our upbringing, right? That's the voice in our head. Part of it, I think, is also, you know, our brain is designed to keep us safe. And it's the fear that drives that inner critic of, you know, whether it's the fear of failure, the fear of rejection, the fear of being found out. We're all afraid of the same things at the end of the day. And so, you know, it's our mind's way of trying to keep us safe. But to your point, it's how do you talk back? How do you, right, overcome the inner critic and that self-doubt, which is so powerful. The other thing I want to touch upon, which is also very relatable, is this feeling of having to prove your worth. Right. And that we accomplish something thinking it's going to fulfill us, and then we accomplish it and we're on to the next thing. We're off to the races. We don't have time to celebrate. We don't have time to bask in the glory and to really sit and acknowledge our accomplishments. What was your experience like in overcoming that?
One of the things that really helps me, and also that's why I have it as a free resource for people if they go to my website, is I call it the Archive of Awesome. And I always say to people, like, our brains are very good at remembering the negative, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's just how we're wired. Again, yep. Going back to what you're saying, like those protection things, like if it hurts to touch the log on fire, don't do it again. So our brains are already set up to remember that. So we have to actively work to overcome that. So when I talk about this archive of awesome is I always challenge people, take 10 minutes and write down accomplishments you're proud of from your entire life. And people are like, who cares about what I did when I was a kid? I said, okay, that's because fear doesn't fight fair. Fear is going to bring something up that happened when we were, you know, we little people, as far back as we can remember. And it's going to trip us up decades later. Like, no one's going to argue that fact. It's like, okay, well, fear's not going to fight fair, then neither are we. Like, write down those accomplishments from your professional career, from your family life, from your adult life. But also, take credit for those things that you've done when you were younger. Like, that's why I have all this stuff hanging behind me. Like, those letters of commendation that threw me into a panic attack, now they're hanging up on a wall. They lived in a desk for like a decade, Gio. Mm-hmm. Right beside something from Homeland Security project I worked on. It's a medal, a bronze medal I got when I was, I think, 8 years old in a Cub Scout. My dad and I built a race car and I got third place. And I found that in a box and it's hanging up beside stuff from my professional career, because that's all part of who I am. And the reason why it's important to either write it down physically in a notebook or in the fillable PDF that will get sent to you if you sign up for my newsletter, or just creating a note on your phone, is on those days when you wake up and, like, I don't care what you've gone through, you're going to wake up some days and you're going to be like, I don't think I can do whatever it is in front of me. Mm-hmm. You can pause and look at this physical list of things that you have done and be like, okay, I've done hard things before and I'll be able to figure this out. Look at this irrefutable data that I have of things that I've done throughout my life. So that's one of the biggest tips I can give to people to start establishing that self-confidence.
Yeah, it's great. A great point. And, you know, I think also recognizing that it's amazing to see your awards and accolades. I think it's important to recognize, some people might say, well, that's all external. How do we develop that internal sense of worth? I think it's important to just draw the distinction between getting validation from the external accolades and awards versus really acknowledging the value that you bring and really using it to understand, you know, help develop your sense of self-worth, right? And knowing, sometimes I'll ask clients, like, what's your value? What do you bring to the table? And people have a really hard time with that question, right? But to your point, if you don't reflect back on what you've accomplished and what you're actually capable of, it's hard to answer that question.
Right. Yeah. And so to me, it's not that, you know, one of those letters of commendation from NASA gives me worth and makes me feel good about myself. What it is, it's a tangible reminder that I can think on my feet. I can consider others. I can consider their safety. I can make big decisions on the spot. That's what it represents to me. So it's not like looking at me like, okay, John's awesome because I got an award. Yeah. It's like, no, John's awesome because he has these innate skills that enabled him and his team to be successful to earn that award.
Absolutely. And those leadership skills that you were talking about earlier too. So John, you talk about being an authentic human of action. Tell us a little bit more about that. What does that mean to you?
Yeah. So many people have so many big dreams and goals and they never take action on them. So if nothing else, a common thread throughout my life is I was always willing to just give it a try. So the authentic part comes in because for so much of my life, like I talked about, I was going after these accolades and the next thing and the next thing and the next thing and the next thing to get worth. It's because I was operating out of alignment with who I truly am. Mm-hmm. You know, somewhere along the way, I kind of veered off the path as a, you know, of who I truly was. And so it's important to understand what lights you up, like truly lights you up as an individual. And that's why the other part of like the Enneagram test that I have for people, it's like, okay, are you someone who looks to be, you know, a helper all the time? Is that how you get your self-worth? Are you someone who always wants to like stand out and be different? Is that how you feel like you get your self-worth? And it's important to understand what lights you up, but it's also important to understand that there's a positive and a negative to all that. You know, if you're getting your worth from just continually doing things to be different, but they don't make you happy, like, then that's not operating out of a place of authenticity. Mm-hmm. And the longer you operate out of a place of inauthenticity, that's when your energy levels just get sapped and you just really, it robs a lot of the joy. So I always make sure when I'm working with someone, like, to figure out like what really lights them up and how can we now take action in the way your life is currently set up to bring you more in alignment with that.
Mm-hmm. It's a great point, because we do, the more we go through life, we get further and further away from that, right? And so it's how do we reconnect with who right. we truly are? And to your point, align, right? Make sure we're aligned with our values, our actions are aligned with what matters to us. John, we talk a lot about redefining success on this podcast. I would love to know from your experience and your perspective, how do you define success for yourself? And how has that definition evolved for you over time?
I think when I was in a place where I was continually seeking validation and with low self-esteem, my success was, you know, for lack of a term, feeling like a badass, like doing things that no one else could do. Mm-hmm. And I still do carry some of that with me, but that's not where I define my value from. Like, because when I was working to gain my value through my just actions, I just had this veneer of perfection created in this superhero persona. And I would defend that like tooth and nail. If I felt someone was questioning me, like I would say very pointed phrases to them. I would, you know, just cut the legs out from under them verbally, just because I had built up this veneer of perfection. So back then my version of success was, you know, I'll do things no one else will do. And mm-hmm. that's how I get my value. Whereas now, you know, I still do value that. And just this morning, like I was outside in the 20 degree weather with my buddies exercising at 5:15 AM. I enjoy challenging myself and doing those elite type of things that not a lot of people can do. But now success is how am I showing up for myself and for others? Like, am I showing up in a way for myself where I feel good about it? That's in alignment with me. And mm-hmm. also, am I showing up in a way that helps people propel themselves forward and being a positive influence in their life? And also, am I able to cut out the negativity of individuals in my life that aren't bringing positivity into me?
Mm-hmm. I love that. So powerful. So last question before we wrap up. How, sure. million-dollar question, how right. do we practice increasing self-confidence? What is one thing that you want our listeners to take away?
I really want them to set a timer on their phone for 10 minutes and write or type up what they're proud of that they've done throughout their life. And that's a starting point. It's a list that's meant to be added to. Like I have a Google note on my phone. I just add to it continually.
Yeah.
Love so that is the biggest thing that I can tell people. And the reason why it's important to keep up and it's not a one and done kind of exercise is you're continually doing things that you're probably not taking credit for.
Yeah.
Because that's not a muscle that has likely been exercised in your life, mental muscle. So the more you practice something, the more repetition, you'll be able to be like, oh, I should write that down. That's cool. I need to write that down. And then what that does is that switches your focus from pausing, and even if it's just a moment to type it up and celebrate it, you're still celebrating it. And that will really change your mindset and build your self-confidence.
Yeah. And you can reflect back on it. I think that's a great exercise and such great advice, you know, and I think you really have to dig deep when you do those exercises, right? Because it's not always the things that are obvious and that are top right. of mind. Sometimes you have to dig a little deeper because it's not always the big things that everybody right. could see. Sometimes it's the little things. And so such great advice. John, where can our listeners learn more about you and the work that you do?
Oh, thank you. It's johnmalora.com/freestuff. And you can go there and sign up for my newsletter, and you'll get a PDF of the Archive of Awesome that you can fill out or just tack it to your wall as a reminder. But it's just johnmallura.com.
Perfect. John, I want to thank you for being here, for sharing your insights, your story, and your expertise. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much for sharing, Gia.
And of course, you can visit my website at gialacqua.com, reach out on Instagram at gialacqua. On the homepage of my website, you can download your complimentary copy of From Chaos to Clarity, a 30-day journal for self-discovery and healing. This is Gia signing off with gratitude for your time and energy. Our mic drops, but the movement continues. Until next time, your next chapter is waiting. Take care.
That concludes another empowering episode of Your Future Starts Now. Before we wrap up, I want to thank this incredible community of high-achieving women. Your energy, resilience, and commitment to growth are the driving force behind what we do. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate it, leave a review, and don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Your feedback fuels our mission to empower high-achieving women just like you. And of course, share your future starts now with the extraordinary women in your life who are also on a journey of healing and empowerment. Connect with us on social media, share your thoughts, let us know what topics you'd like to explore in future episodes. Stay connected on Instagram at Gia Lacqua. I encourage you to carry the energy of this conversation into your day and keep on supporting the incredible women around you. Until next time, remember, your next chapter is waiting.